I feel like doing business here, I'm not an expert, so I don't want to say it's bad or good. I'm leaning towards it's, you've been here, so you know a little bit about the bureaucracy. It's not the easiest to navigate.
Insured Nomads proudly supports the New Nomad podcast. Insured Nomads, for the evolution of insurance, for the revolution of travel. For all your travel, medical, and support needs, please visit our website at insurednomads.com. We support our location-independent community worldwide.
Welcome to the New Nomad Podcast, hosted by Alan and Andrew of Insured Nomads. Join us as Alan and Andrew interview and explore the community of people and ideas that embody the nomadic spirit. Tune in to incredible discussions with thought leaders each week that will help you take full advantage of the cross-border remote work lifestyle. Now here are your hosts.
Welcome and thanks for joining us at the New Nomad Podcast, the podcast that supports the digital nomad remote worker experience. I have Steve Sensorensky with me today. Steve is somebody who has traveled to 65 different countries. He is a digital nomad ambassador. He's a content creator, copywriter, somebody who has got a very interesting story. And for those of you who listen to this podcast, you know, a big part of this is about confidence to travel and hearing people's different stories, but also getting different resources. I think it's going to be great to talk to Steve today, who's in one of my favorite countries, Croatia, a wonderful place to visit. But we'll obviously hear about other locations. I'm going to bring Steve into the conversation. Steve, welcome. I'm so happy you could join us. If you could take our listeners quickly through we had a little bit of conversation preamble, Ohio State University to now you're in Croatia. And what? Tell me about your excitement to travel and how you ended up where you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, appreciate the invite to be on. Excuse me. It's probably my favorite thing to talk about, to be honest. Like, there's nothing I like, maybe the Cleveland Browns, but there's nothing I like more than talking about traveling and how to do it and just sharing those experiences. So how it started, even before Ohio State, was my parents were the ones that like sort of put this nugget into my mind. They're from the Soviet Union. And so came to America in the 80s. I won't take a lot of time with this, but they came to the US in the 80s. By the time I was born in 86, we were doing these little family vacations when I was young. Anytime there's free time, they wanted to explore America. So they're like, all right, let's get in the car. Let's get in the van. We're going to go to Ocean City, Maryland. We're going to go to Hilton Head. We're going to go to Florida. And so it was just in my mind, anytime I had free time, I needed to learn something, explore something, have a different experience. And that's just never went away. And so when I had the ability after I finished at Ohio State to put that into action, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna figure out a way to revolve my life around traveling. And I was working in, you know, a creative field, so it's maybe a little bit easier to do it that way, but also more difficult in some ways. It's not as stable, but still.
Yeah.
So from Ohio State, I moved out to the East Coast, and I was working in video production and film production, and got sick of that quickly. Moved to Colorado to be a ski bum, moved to New Zealand to be a ski bum.
Awesome.
So did those back to back, came back, worked in the industry again, and finally I randomly got a job being a digital marketing content specialist for Royal Caribbean. Traveled with them for a lot, produced adventure travel videos for companies that took me to Africa and Tanzania, Zambia, Zimbabwe, South Africa. Another company took me to Nepal. That was with my video production stuff. And then directed music videos that took me places. And then worked for another travel company that was taking me to, you know, a cruise line that was a multimedia producer for. So all of that, traveling in between all of those things for longer periods of time. And now I travel 100% of the time. As of 3 years ago, really I've been doing this for over a decade, but 3 years ago was when I stopped doing video stuff, and I'm only doing writing and choosing where I go intentionally now and not being sent places anymore.
So to tie that together, so you monetize your travels by doing content. Explain to our audience, if they're running a business or they're running an event or something, how they would use you, because we all very familiar with hiring somebody to, let's say, do a music video, but a content and writing is a different field altogether. Help us understand that.
Yeah, it was strange. When I switched to it, it was pandemic related, because everyone on earth, all of our work dried up, and I'm like, and then all the travel dried up. So I wanted to work again somehow. Travel again. And so it was a matter of figuring out some work to do that could facilitate that. I realized I was sort of burned out on video and photography, and I'd been thinking about these things wrong. I thought because it was a more refined skill set in my mind, at least, to do video, there's so many different elements going on that I should be paid more to do that. But it's also a much easier thing to learn.
Sure.
Anybody can literally learn it. Whereas writing, which I also thought, who's going to pay writers? I'm doing significantly better as a writer than I ever did as a video producer, because it's much harder to outsource quality writing. Yep. You could outsource a video get it to like 80% good, hire someone to just finish it and make it really nice. You have to hire someone that can think and write and like understand your brand fundamentally, which is just completely harder beast for many people to find a good one. And so I went deep into figuring out, I had a marketing degree, so I sort of was like, I'll finally use this marketing degree of mine.
Yeah.
And so yeah, changed careers, started from zero, and now like have my copywriting business all since the pandemic. So I started that in 2020.
What I think separates you from other folks who do similar things is because of the countries you've traveled to. If a travel company comes to you or a digital nomad remote work company comes to you, you understand the buzzwords and what needs to be out there. So I would take it there's a bit of a difference with somebody who's writing copywriting, who's purely a US or a domestic, you know, somebody's there versus somebody like you who's been to a lot of different places, right? Is that what is kind of a big difference in the perspective?
There's a perspective difference. And like, so the writing I do is not normally in this space that we're talking about, but it's usually tech. But even so, the ability to have interacted with people from so many different countries and learned so many different things, you start to think a little bit differently about problems and solutions and how you tackle them and how you get to, you know, not just copy solutions for their writing, but like it just shifts how you look at, I think, everything. And it gets addicted to that end too. It's like you get better at thinking, which makes you a better problem solver, which makes you more valuable. And it's sort of this righteous circle of like of positivity. Like if I wrote a lot about digital nomads specifically, and I occasionally get, no one pays me to write about that, unfortunately. I've written for CNBC, I've written for World Nomads about that, but like, nah, I wish it was the only thing I wrote about. It helps a lot there though. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because one of the things that we have on this podcast is a lot of people are very creative, and the creative people are the ones that often can pick the location, pick what work they want to take, you know, provided you have good Wi-Fi and you have, you know, your kind of wits about you and the different things, and the marketing element is hard because you have to kind of get that out there. It's interesting to me how you're running this business. So is Croatia a place that you picked because it's a good place to do business out of, or because that was somewhere that you were really kind of like, I just love this country and this Balkans are an area I want to explore. So how did you end up there vis-a-vis your job?
Definitely the latter. I feel like doing business here, I'm not an expert, so I don't want to say it's bad or good. I'm leaning towards this. You've been here, so you know a little bit about the bureaucracy. It's not the easiest to navigate. Probably not the most ideal place. I plan to live here though. So because I very much the latter.
Sure.
So no matter how difficult stuff is, and everything's getting better around the Balkans with all of that, but it's squarely and solely 100% related to the second thing, which was the feeling of being here, the people, the community aspect of how close, you know, things are in terms of, there's just a different level of care for one another. I find here in this region and all these countries that is like a really good energy to be around and makes you want to be part of a community. Whether you're traveling full-time or not traveling full-time, you want to have connections. And I think here is a really good place for it, for a human connection. And after traveling for so long, I kind of got to Croatia and was like, this is my spot. I'm pretty much good. Like I still travel. I intend to continue traveling, but I like coming back here.
Gotcha. And they're one of the countries that's done a good job with the digital nomad visas. And
phenomenally good job. And what I love about it is, so I discovered it because like how everyone does, it's like, it's gorgeous. But when you come here, they are doing a really good job of promoting this particular visa. And I think that's why it's been successful is it's not just, so some governments will put it together and that's the end of the story. What happened here was the government obviously put it together, but with input from private sector. And then private sector said, cool, we have this tool now and we're going to take the banner and we'll run with it and we'll put this out there. And so it wasn't just like only incumbent on the government to say, let's pay for all the promotion. It was people here really wanted to make it work. And so it became like everyone knows the word digital nomad here, like on the coast that I did, but in Zagreb, like there's a big hub there. There's like, it's a country that went sort of all in on it. And that's also why it's really easy for digital nomads to come here because they know they'll be welcomed in here very easily. There's already an infrastructure. There's tons of these Facebook groups that have tens of thousands of people in them, very like sort of focused on the end user, let's say, which is us.
Well, I'll add that I've been to Croatia and what I was impressed with was the, what I'll call the creature comforts. The food is tremendous, but not overly expensive.
Yep.
The, you get a good, great cup of coffee, a nice wine or beer, if you like. People are relaxed. You got the beaches you can get to. The cities are nice. There's some great history there. You know, how about yourself? Are you running into the same thing?
You're doing a better job than me. It was like, I feel like maybe because I'm back and I just, it's so natural to me now. Like last year, if you asked me, I would have just said all the same things you did. But I'm like, I'm kind of like at home. vibe now. It's just what it is now. So I'm so used to it. But and I was just in Albania, so it's a similar vibe with that. But like, food here is phenomenal. People here are beyond excellent, and the history, that's another thing that the region has, like, history that's just out of this world interesting. Not just recent history, but dating back to centuries and centuries and centuries. That quite frankly, we just don't have. We don't have buildings that old in the States, which is fine. Yeah. I'm just younger. It's just what it is. But I love being in places where, like, Split, where I am right now, for example, Diocletian's Palace, which is like 1700 years old. Stroll in there, you can have a coffee there. That's mind-boggling to me still, and I've been in there like hundreds of times now at this point. So yeah, the history intertwined with the modern society, and you have a whole different country when you go east. When you go east of Zagreb into Slavonia, out to Vukovar on the Serbian border, like, that's, you almost feel like you're in a completely new place, completely different. People are even nicer because, like, here they know they're going to get people coming, tourists coming to visit.
Sure.
Out there, they're like, you want to stay for a week? Fine. Here's food. Here's rakia. Here's beer. Blah, blah, blah. Here's wine. We made it all at home. We made it all domestic. Here's our cheese. They just, like, aggressively are nice to you.
It's interesting because you touched upon the history aspects of it. When I was there, it was amazing to me as I traveled through the different areas that Yugoslavia ever held together as long as it did, because these are such different places. I mean, you touched upon it. You've been in Croatia, but you got in Albania. I've been fortunate enough to get to Albania, Montenegro, Kosovo. These are all within a very small area, but you can see they're so different. And historically, they were held together until the war in the Balkans. And thankfully, that ended. There's still a lot of places you can visit that bear some scars from that time. But the people have come out of that, you know, and rebuilt a whole wonderful different countries, right? It's an interesting way to go between these locations that aren't that far apart, but they're very different in a lot of the mindset.
Yeah. And what I like is that this is interesting, an example from when I worked on cruise lines. Actually, I worked with a guy from, I feel like, I can't remember the exact country, this is so long, it's over a decade ago. I think it was like Macedonia and Albania, maybe. But it was two countries that were regionally enemies. Yeah. And at the time, it was still sort of cold tension. And we were having a beer somewhere off the coast of, like, Alaska, I think. And we're talking about, they were in war. Literally, they were older guys. They were both literally at war for their countries. And we're all having a good time relaxing. I'm like, what's the deal? Like, how is this possible? It's like, well, when we're there, all that stuff sort of, we're told to think about that because our governments don't like each other. But when we're gone, when we're away from that place, we're the closest thing that we have to someone in common. And so, And so when you remove all that physically, take yourself out of that place, like, they're still intertwined on their histories, their people, not to say they're the same, obviously, but, like, that's why I think that there's a vibrancy here. People are really culturally rich. They stick to their traditions. They want to keep them, but they're also, like, past the war phase of all of that, hopefully. It's all simmered now, but it is noticeable. I mean, there's differences that are very stark, but there's also similarities that underlie the whole region that make it really wonderful to be in, I think.
So you mentioned something earlier, and you're a Cleveland Browns fan, and you're trying to watch from a distance. And admittedly, to our audience out there who may not be huge sports fans, a Cleveland Browns fan is a long suffering, but but you know what? There will be a reward someday. That teams do come around, and sometimes you wonder what type of pain and suffering you have to go through for that reward. But as you're traveling about, is it easy to follow your teams, you know, nowadays from afar? And can you actually see the games, or do you just get the extract? I mean, are there associations, like in the United States, if you travel to a different city, you can usually find a Cleveland Browns bar. But are there, like, groups that get together and watch these games where you've traveled, or is you're kind of a more lonely experience?
It's more lonely experience. It depends, because there are some places where you could find, like, a Browns backers, like, outlet, but it's still, like, generally, it's pretty solitary. But the Browns have a big fan base. So Ohio State is actually easier to watch. There's way more people that you can find to watch Ohio State stuff. But I follow it. It's usually like a day late, I'll read about in the morning. But there's certain games where I'm like, I have to make an effort to watch this. I don't care what time it is.
Yeah.
So like last season, we had our first playoff win and the game in forever. And so I believe it was a primetime game. I stayed up till game started at 2 here, I think. Later, even maybe 2. I was up till like 4 in the morning. At least watching the Browns. Yeah. And I watched their next game also late. Watched Ohio State get destroyed in the national championship year or two ago, whenever we were at the championship. Yeah.
Correct. Yep.
I didn't watch that whole thing because it was clear we were going to lose the first quarter. So I'm like, great, save me some time. I can get some sleep now. But I've gone here. I mean, here in Split, where I lived for part of the season last year, there's a bar that has like NFL Red Zone. So go there and have some beers, and you can actually probably this weekend, that's what I'll do.
So. It's a great way to build community, because one of the things we have from any of the digital nomads and the expats is community is hard to build. And at least when I've traveled, I found that if you can find a good sports bar, right? If you got Wi-Fi, you can pick up the games. Or the other thing, Steve, that I often would do is if you could find a good microbrewery in most different countries, you'll run into different folks there. I don't know, as you traveled about, have you built some community?
Yeah, I think you're right that people, it's the chief worry that I think I hear a lot, which is how am I going to meet people? And just where am I going to meet people? Like, it's ironic because like now we're in a time when there's like, you could connect with anyone with your phone more easily than ever before. You could just Facebook groups, there's WhatsApp, there's Telegraph, there's groups everywhere. The connection has never been more readily available, but people feel more unconnected than ever.
Sure.
And I think the basic thing that you mentioned is just being comfortable with going to a place on your own and just sitting down. And eventually, like, you'll have 20 minutes of awkwardness maybe, but just the act of being there and having a beer. And like, I've gone to countless places by myself, just sat down and was like, all right, I'll eventually figure out how to talk to somebody. There's always an opportunity to make some kind of conversation. And then people on the flip side of that, usually no one loves seeing someone by themselves either. Like, maybe like if you don't look like a weirdo, people will just ask you how you're doing also, you know? So I've never found it like wildly difficult. It's definitely like not the most comfortable thing on the planet.
Yes.
But what's nice about sort of, I think, this lifestyle is you choose. It's on you. Like if I want to be alone, I'll be in my apartment here all alone if I want to be. But if I want connection, I have to go do it myself. So I have full control over like all elements of my life, which I think is a super powerful and empowering thing. And then it's what you want to do with it at that point.
Well, I think, I forget who said it, but somebody once said like 90% of everything is just showing up. And if you don't show up, you won't meet anybody, right?
And that's,
all you have to do is meet there's a couple of people in the light area that you are. So we've talked a lot about Croatia, but certainly as you've been traveling about the 65 different countries, why don't you share a few of the highlights of places that, you know, somebody's listening to this broadcast says, I'd like to go to Croatia, but where else, Steve, would you recommend that you've had great experiences, and take us on a little travel log?
Yeah. So recently, and this one blew my mind, it was Georgia, Tbilisi and like Batumi. So I was in Tbilisi, Gori, Batumi, and a town called Kazbegi near the border with Russia.
Yeah.
Georgia, mind blowing. It's maybe one of the greatest places I've ever been, ever. And normally when I go to places, I have great opinions about them, but I don't always feel like I have to come back. Usually I don't. Usually I'm kind of like, that was great, I enjoyed it, but I don't have to really go back to a lot of places I've been. Not because I don't like them, they're just, it feels like, okay, that was it. Georgia is a place I could go, I think I'm going to go trying every year. It's exceptional. Every level of it is great. I mean, affordability obviously is there. It's stunningly beautiful. The nature in Georgia is second to none. Food is outstanding. I think it's one of the top cuisines on the planet. No one really ever considers it, but it's because people don't know it that well. But food is as good as anywhere you'll get. Wine was basically invented there, so you have copious wine flowing everywhere if you're into wine, and it's all good, high quality. Like I remember, the ordering sizes were like half liter and liter. Like I couldn't get a glass sometimes. So Georgia blew my mind. And so, that one's very, very high. Albania, it was recent. I just came, but I really enjoyed it. I was in Tirana. I feel bad that I didn't get to explore more because just time-wise, I was only able to spend a handful of weeks there. But that was also one of those ones where it was not expected for it to be that enjoyable. New Zealand, I lived in for like 11 months. But that was ages ago. I'd imagine a lot of the good stuff hasn't changed. It's gotten more expensive now. But stunningly beautiful. Every kind of landscape you could want. They have deserts, mountains, glaciers, rivers, like fjords. Phenomenal. And pristine. I think it's taken care of above everything else. So those three have been really enjoyable.
And if you're a Lord of the Rings fan, it's a fantastic place to go. They've made quite a tourist attraction out of that, right?
Yeah, they did. I mean, you have Hobbiton or whatever, which is the town that they filmed in or that they created and filmed in. But Mount Doom, you can actually there's a trail called the Tongariro Crossing, and Mount Doom is in there, and you could walk up to the top of it if you want to.
You know, you touched upon something with different cuisines too. You know, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, I would have never thought of Georgia. I'll look into that. And I'm just wondering, because it's kind of at a crossroads, right? So is the cuisine kind of what you might see in the Balkans, and then you have some Russian influence with borscht and things like that? And I mean, some of these places that tend to be crossroads tend to have great cuisines. Yeah. Is that what happened
there? So you have it. It's even deeper than that, because Tbilisi was along the Silk Road. So you have like not just the recent influence of the civilizations, but you have stuff coming from Middle East and Asia through there. So like it is a hodgepodge of amazing flavors, genuinely. I mean, you have the influence of Turkey, since it's right there on their western border, Russia, right there, you know, Azerbaijan and Armenia. And right below that is like Iran. So like you're in a neighborhood of the world. I mean, it's right now a very touchy neighborhood of the world.
Yes.
But historically, it's been like a through line for like all of the delicious things that we love. And they kind of marry there in Tbilisi. So you have just a lot of really great ingredients, a lot of great like chefs and creative people making great food from, you know, millennia ago.
Sure.
And like the first time I went out to walk around town, kept seeing these people eating these dumpling looking things.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm like, oh, cool. It's like an Asian restaurant. Cool. And then the next table saw the same thing. I'm like, I was with a friend of mine. I'm like, is this Georgian food? Like, what's going on? He's like, yeah, these are hinkali. Like they're soup dumplings. I'm like, I never would have thought there'd be some like soup dumplings here, but it looks like Chinese or Asian food, whatever. And
then
you have these delicious cheeses that are like hachapuri, which is basically like bread, a bread bowl, cheese, and ajari. And hachapuri has a giant egg cracked in it. Mix that all up and you have like the best, most decadent cheesy bread experience of your life. I can talk about Georgian food aggressively.
No, I my mouth's watering just thinking about the soup dumplings, which of course you've got to be a little careful so you don't get burned if you hit them wrong, right?
So you definitely, there's a technique. There's a technique. So you make a little hole, let it air out a little bit, suck some of the soup. You got to, because they come out lava hot. Phenomenal.
You make me laugh, Steve, because I ran into that when I was in China and did the soup dumplings the first time, and they're like going through the whole thing. And no matter how many times you've tried, you'll always mess up the first few times you have them, and you'll get a little bit cooked on there. So the question we ask many of all of our guests, actually, and I know you've given us a couple overlooked places, but we'll have to put this off to the side on Georgia and others, is could you share with our folks a overlooked person, place, experience that maybe people want to get out in that big world of ours and investigate that's a little bit different?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely blew it by saying Georgia earlier in the conversation, because that's going to be...
I know, you behind the eight right off the bat.
No, it's fine, because there's... I could come up with something else. Oof. I will say... Well, first of all, I'll say, and I haven't been to some of these, but the region that Georgia's in is also very interesting, Azerbaijan and Armenia. It's not from personal experience, so I feel like that's not fair to go into, but that whole region just seems great. I will say, you know what, I'll go with Nepal, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because Nepal is, I hope people associate it with the Himalayas, but it's much more majestic in real person, or in real life, than I think what anyone actually imagines. So you fly into the Kathmandu, which is sort of the embodiment of chaos, and you wonder like how this peaceful religion of Buddhism could be prevalent in this just like chaos.
Yeah.
And then you fly off into, you know, Lukla Airport, which is the most, literally billed as the most dangerous airport on the planet, because you have to land like on a slope because there's no roads that go there. So if you want to go to the Everest region, you have to fly into this dangerous airport. When they fly out, you fly off a cliff and then come back up, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Because there's just not enough runway.
Yeah.
So the beauty there, though, once you're hiking out in the Himalayas, and I've touched on it before, the people aspect of the place, which is, I think, among the most important things. You could have the most beautiful stuff on the planet, but if you don't have, you know, people that are open and willing to connect back with you, the place loses interest to me fairly quickly. And what was great about Nepal is that you have that. You have the beauty. You have obviously some very rich tradition there. And there's a really sharing atmosphere there. Really, 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 really wonderful people. Not just in the mountains, but in Kathmandu and Pokhara. They're sort of second city. It's beautiful. So I would say Nepal is a place people don't necessarily go that often, that if you're a hiker especially, you should be out there.
That sounds cool. I mean, first off, your airport, there's a lot of funky landing spots around it. But that one sounds, you know, one of the all-time classics. I was talking to a traveler also who... They could only land on the beach at low tide in some airport in Scotland. So they time it because you land on the hard pan. So, you know, you learn these different stories. You know, sometimes I think it's exotic enough flying into San Diego where you just come in and do a power turn over the city. But then you hear about kind of diving off a cliff and then pulling it back up. That's pretty cool.
It's a wild airport. Lukla, Lukla Airport.
I will. I love picking up facts like that. And that's the type of intellectual curiosity that's really cool about, you know, our digital nomad community. So as we wind down the interview today, you've obviously traveled a lot of places. Would you mind just sharing a few travel tips with somebody who's listening to this podcast and says, I want to do what Steve's doing, but I don't want to make any mistakes. Of course, we'll always make mistakes. That's how we learn. But is there a couple of shortcuts or travel tips you might have to make people's life a little easier on their travels?
Yeah, I think one of them is something we touched on before, is a willingness to be open to new experiences and not sort of be in the bubble of what of your own expectations. And that could take the form of either just doing something different or putting yourself out of your comfort zone and talking to people that you might not. So that's always a good tip for when you're already traveling to get going, is to just, honestly, it's simple. It's just to actually pay for a trip, not like make plans, but like put money on something.
Yeah.
Once you've paid for a plane ticket, you fundamentally shift how you're going to go about everything else after that. Cause you can plan meticulously, but you can always find an excuse not to go. But once you pay for something, I would say that helped me back in the day. Was like, I try to make plans with friends and nobody would go with me. This was years and years ago. And I'm like, you know what? I can just go by myself. And that was a harrowing thing. But once I paid for it, I'm like, all right, it's done. It's done. I have to do it now.
I think that's a great tip. Cause as a matter of fact, I'm going to Cambodia and Laos early next year. And all these people are like, yeah, I'm in. All right, let's now buy our tickets. Mm-hmm. Six people became me and my friend. All of a sudden when money has to come out, right?
Yeah.
You find out who is really going and who is not on that.
And it's a difference between you going or not going also. So I think that's like something I found, which I take for granted now, is like, I'll just look up something I want to do and pay for it and it's done. But in the past, that wasn't so easy. But it was the thing that made me actually get going, was putting money on the line.
Very cool. So where can people learn more about you and catch up with you and use your copywriting services? Share with our audience, and we'll make sure that the folks that this is in our notes on the podcast, so you'll be able to get links when we post this.
Perfect. So for writing, it's sbtcreative.com. And then, my LinkedIn has tons of stuff for photography and other stuff, just like more in the moment travel stuff that I'm doing. It's finally.made.it at Instagram. And those are the main two. And then I'm always happy to connect if anyone wants to reach out and have chats as well. So.
And certainly if I was heading to Croatia, I would look you up too. So this is great.
I'll be here for a bit. So come on over.
Sounds good. So thanks for joining us today, Steve. Really great conversation. So, I learned some unique new things. Every time you have a conversation with somebody like Steve who travels, you learn something new. So thank you all for listening to today's podcast. Remember, the way people find podcasts like ours is word of mouth. So just tell somebody else. And we really appreciate your support. We want you to be confident in your travels. So thanks again. And thank you for joining us on the New Nomad Podcast.
Insured Nomads proudly supports the New Nomad Podcast. Insured Nomads, for the evolution of insurance, for the revolution of travel. For all your travel, medical, and support needs, please visit our website at insurednomads.com. We support our location-independent community worldwide.
Thanks for tuning in to the New Nomad Podcast, where we bring together an incredible community of people and ideas that embody the nomadic spirit. Please remember to subscribe and leave a review. For more amazing tips to help you take advantage of the cross-border lifestyle, please visit us at insurednomads.com/podcast. See you next week.